Thank you for the introduction. Thank you for the invitation. I'm back in Prague. I have been in Prague the last 2 years, many times when I did the training in existential coaching here in Prague. And so I'm in love with this city and I feel at home and I feel this warmth which I always encounter in Czech people. Thank you for being there and for letting me speak to you. I'm speaking about something difficult. I'm speaking about something you all know already. And I'm speaking about something which is somehow controversial to the mindsets and ideas which you have about coaching and about leadership. So, the coaching and leadership, we can compare it with a house which has different entrances. And one door to this house is this existential approach. And existential means it has to do with my life, with my existence, with my being here. So the specific door through which we are going now is what we all know, how to lead a life, also in the working situation. There is no gap between work and life. Work, if work is not life, it's bad. It's adversity, it's damaging. So we all know how life goes. But how can we apply the essentials of life in coaching, in leadership? How can we help people to be alive, to be themselves, to be authentic in their work situation? So the existential aim is not to improve success. It's not to improve achievement. These are secondary questions. These are outcome questions. We focus something different. We focus how can you be there where you are. And don't grasp, don't focus on performance. Be primarily yourself. As a coach, as a coachee, we teach them in the coaching as a leadership personality. So, existential coaching is not solution focused, but process focused, focused on the being. We would say the solution is to come into a process. I'm repeating many things which my first speaker already spoke about. They have it implicit, and I try to make it explicit. I would like to speak about many issues. Existential motivation is central, the goal, the attitude, the structure, some brief remarks on success, and finally, a summary on leadership tasks. A short profile. This is boring now. I just give you the background so that you know what I'm going to talk about has a large history. It is based on Nietzsche, Kierkegaard, etc. You may know some of these philosophers and founders of existential psychological schools and movements like Binswanger, Frankl, Jaspers, Jalom may be the most known in your country. There are many existential psychotherapists. One, Karel Balzer, is from Prague. Existential psychology is just a branch of a humanistic psychology. 2 weeks ago appeared the first World Handbook on Existential Therapy in London. With the main editor-in-chief, Emmy van Dursen, and the representative of the main schools, Eric Craig, myself, Kirk Schneider, Dick Pitanter, and Simon Duploc made it the worldwide perspective. This is also a background I'm speaking about, existential coaching, a book, existential leadership. They are in German, though. And working burnout, existential perspective on burnout. So what is the existential motivation? Frankl had a saying which was puzzling so many people when he said, people do not strive for happiness. When I heard it for the first time, I was somehow shocked. I thought, is he now going to be crazy? We all want to be happy. And then he made a decisive step. But they strive for a reason to be happy. This makes a big difference. I want to know why. What makes me happy? I don't want to just be happy by chance, by drugs, by alcohol or whatever. I want to have a solid foundation. My happiness should be related to the reality. Then it is a true happiness. Truth means connection with what is there. Since the medieval age, this is the old definition of truth. So, to connect with a deeper level, not just with the outcome, not just with the result, not just success, but to have a reason for all this. And so we could say for leaders and for coaches, they also want to have a reason for their happiness, for their success, for their work. Not just to be successful, but to know why, what is my contribution, what did I do, to know, always know what I did and why I did this intervention, why I asked this question. This makes the coach professional and the leader a professional leader. What are reasons? Yeah, not just cheating or forcing or so. No, reasons are facts, clear facts. When I know I have this capacity, this is a good reason why I'm successful. Or I know the values which we are referring to. I know about importance. I have clear decisions. I decided for it. I wanted it. They are chosen activities. And I'm personally engaged. And more than this, I have a clear context, a bigger horizon in which I'm standing. And that what I do has meaning. It means it fits to the circumstances. There is an existential criterion. When a success, when a procedure, when an action is really well-based, existentially based, then we get a feedback on which we can measure subjectively, personally, individually, if we are well-based in our proceeding. This is the feeling of inner fulfillment. Am I fulfilled in what I do? Working with clients, working in enterprises. The fulfillment is more than just happiness. Or it is the real happiness, the deep happiness. Fulfillment means it gives me something inwardly. It is filling me up inwardly. We will come back to fulfillment. Now we make the detour on the process to it. We look at the existential goal. We start with the vision of the human being, an anthropological question. What is the essence of the human being? What makes the human being really human? The fact that the human being has the capacity to decide, that the human being is free, autonomous, that we are able to build our lives. That we don't have to be here, but that we decided to come here. This is an application of the human freedom. And the goal in existential approach, which is of course a goal of all kinds of coaching, is to respect this human freedom. But the specific of the existential approach is that we attach, we connect, we work with this central issue of the human being. And this comes into terms by the looking at the inner concept. If inner consent is an inner saying yes, an inner resonance. It is not a thought. The thought is simply accompanying this coming up in me. You feel it constantly. You may have a consent, an inner yes, to listen now. Or you may have a dissent and say, well, it's not so interesting for me. I think about my family at home or my next coaching or what I'm going to do in the lunch break. Then you are not present in here and that what we do. You are present in your world and continue to be in your world. Inner consent is, I feel a yes, this I want to do. I want to be there. I want to participate. I want to engage. Inner consent cannot be done. Inner consent is that what I am. It is a personal felt yes, a personal yes, a personal agreement, approval to what I'm actually doing or going to do, or what I did. And it is given as a resonance. This is important. Many people make the mistake that they think it is a thought, or it is logical, or it is reasonable. Inner consent is not logic. It's not reasonable. It's a perception, a sensing of what is valuable and corresponding to me in my actual situation. That is what we call a resonance. You know what a resonance is? When you have a guitar leaning at the wall and you take another guitar in your hand and you you move a string, the same string is moving at the guitar magically on the side, at the side. So magically something is resonating in me in the given situation. Even if I don't pay attention to it, it happens. But if I don't pay attention, then I may miss something. I may miss myself in the actual situation. The effect of inner consent, of this inner yes, and this existential motivation is maybe the most important I want to bring to you today. So if you forget the rest, it's okay. If you just go out and remember, existential approach means watch the inner consent. Have a look at if this corresponds to you, how you feel about it, how you sense it. There are different forms of feelings, therefore I apply also this sensing, which is a way of intuitive perception. When we have inner consent, then of course we have pure intrinsic motivation. Sally spoke about this difficulty which arose, that you came with a perfect designed idea to the people. But you said we have to ask them if they want. And what they do you have inner consent? Was a perfect example of what I mean here. Consent is free. Although I'm not doing it, although I'm not controlling it, it is an expression of the innermost freedom, the freedom of my essence, which shows up. This is something which is very difficult in our culture, in our times, to make clear. You may have difficulties to take it as such. You may have been, you may be in anxiety that what comes up like this is probably not me, because it's not what my parents expect or I expect for myself, or what is logical or rational. It gives power, it gives me, makes me present. I feel the value in it. It is an authentic action. I will speak a bit more about these issues. And when I have inner consent, I'm not stressed. When I'm stressed, ask, do I really have inner consent to what I do? Am I doing it in my rhythm? Does it correspond to me? What presses me? I may be tired in the evening, but not stressed. The effect of a of action with inner consent is that it helps me to commit myself. Commitment is a very good Latin word. This word means sending with me, mittere in the Latin. I'm sending with me, with that what I do. I'm sending something, me. I am engaged. I'm totally there. So it is important for coaching and leadership activities that these persons are felt, are present. Present, give their presence. We don't know how the others take us or how they can connect with us, but we have to give them a chance. And the best chance what we can offer is if we are fully there with our felt sense, with our felt yes, with our consent. And we show that this brings up automatically interest, participation, connection, relation. Without commitment, there is no existential life. And there is no inner fulfillment. There are three steps. Look at the inner consent. When I have inner consent, I can commit what I do totally. When I do it totally, then I feel myself and I feel the value of that what I do. And this gives the inner fulfillment. It's very simple in itself. And we all know it, and we all do it intuitively. But it's good if a coach knows about that, and if a leader knows about that, because then the coach can be a role model and can work specifically on these issues. What are the specific attitudes? Openness. Openness. Mindfulness is now a term which is used very much in psychology and coaching. We have an old tradition in Europe, phenomenology it is called. Very few people know about phenomenology, although the term is nowadays much more known than 40 years ago. There are some philosophers which are very highly connected with Heidegger, Husserl, Scheler, Vetter, Merleau-Ponty, etc. Phenomenology, this is now a very keen trial to explain you or to give you a short glimpse on phenomenology within 2 minutes. It is an attitude. An attitude is an inner position. I have an attitude towards towards politics, towards religion, towards coaching, towards my clients, towards my family. The phenomenological attitude is the attitude of pure openness. You certainly agree with that, but what does it mean, openness? Openness means I know nothing. I studied, forget about it. I have my life experience, forget about it. Not now, when I'm phenomenological, I try to be purely myself, purely this resonating essence, this person who is capable to be impressed. We all put that aside. We, in phenomenology, the term bracketing is used to put it into brackets and put it aside. This does not mean that it's wrong. It simply means it shouldn't be on the priority. It is secondary. It comes afterwards. Firstly, look at that, what is given, what is said. What does my coachee tell me? How does this reach me? How does it touch me? This is the hermeneutic phenomenology. There are different forms of phenomenology. But, and I don't come up immediately with, oh, I have a theory, I have a method. No, forget about it. Forget about all you learn. Just be yourself, and this is so difficult. This needs training. This needs reflection, this needs self-reflection. Otherwise we are too much in the prison of ourselves, our needs, our experiences, anxieties, etc. And it's not easy. But if somebody can do it, people feel very, very well accepted, understood. The result is, in phenomenology, we do not explain, we have no theory, but we understand. Understanding means I feel and see what moves you, what is the value which you are connected with, what you are afraid of. This is empathy, but more than empathy. And it, in phenomenology, the main issue is that we are respecting the uniqueness, the singularity, the freedom of the person, and do not reduce the person to some deterministic, logical, cause-effect relationship. But we see the connection between value and movement. Not cause-effect, but value and the movement which includes the freedom of the person, the own personal individual processing. It is not interpretation. To come up with a theory or with a psychological or coaching theory means I start to explain. I step out of the process of understanding. Phenomenology is the human capacity to be intuitive in the situation when I'm listening. This means active participation in listening. To be there intuitively and look with one eye at what the coachee says and how he looks or she looks like and what gestures are there and the tone is, and with the other eye I look at how is it resonating in me. What does it start to move? This is very mindful, isn't it? Openness not only towards the other, but also towards the life. Openness to what? To this situation. We are here. What is this telling me? What is this situation, that what I hear, what is this demanding from me? Right now, maybe to listen, to make some notes. By the way, you have the slides afterwards. But it may demand me even more. I may feel and see, I should work on this a bit more. Or I'm so happy to find words to what I already did. For Frankl, this was a very central attitude, or it's not a tool, a perspective to find meaning. He called it existential term. let oneself being asked by the actual situation. I'm explaining this. First, the quotation of Frankl. It is life itself that asks question of man. It is not up to man to question. Rather, he should recognize that he is questioned by life. And now, his duty. The human being's task is to respond by being responsible. Responsible is the attitude of responding to the question of the situation. And he can answer to life only by answering for his life. I will explain it a bit more. The situation, the world, other people, other things, the you, the vis-a-vis others, in phenomenology or in existential philosophy, we often use the world, and me, the free person, we are connected, inseparably. And this world is not just there, but this world comes up to me, questioning me, asking me, speaks to me in form of demands, requirements of the situation, offerings of the situation, opportunities which I have. They are all asking me, what are you going to do? How are you going to respond to this situation? What is the question of this situation for me now? Maybe your question is to stop listening and to follow your own thoughts, or to work through a situation which was associated now, which came up by listening to this content. Then you have your individual personal response to the actual situation. This is the dialogical situation, the dialogical reality of existence. Openness towards the world, letting come in, sensing what's going on, what is needed, what is the opportunity, what is the offering of this situation. In other words, to sum it up, being human means being questioned. And to live means giving answers. So this is our existential task, to find out what is the question of the situation and what is my best answer to it. What can I contribute? So practically speaking, in coaching, the coach is asked what needs the coachee and what requires their situation now. And what from me? Intuitively, we all do it. But there is a whole philosophy behind. And it is important that we know about it, that we can open up, and that we don't come out of our anxiety or knowledge or narcissism with fixed ideas which we want to sell to our coachee. This is not how it works existentially. And then we try to teach, to develop, very good definition, coaching and mentoring as development, the coachee also to look similarly to their situation. What is needed to find that out? Therefore, I don't ask, do you want me to be a friend or a professional or any kind of role? This is my task, to find out what is needed. And then when I think it is this or that, then I may mention, do you want me that we work on this? And in which role do you want me to have to be with you? Just bringing up questions to you? Some personality prefer that, or to give you more ideas or thoughts or knowledge, which I know other personalities prefer that. It's very personality dependent. There is investigations which show that. So just this openness is basic. third type of openness towards oneself. Towards the other, towards the world, the situation, the actual situation, but also towards my inner self. Look at what is going on in me. Start speaking with yourself. Oh, this is moving me. Oh, this is interesting. Oh, that hurt me. And why did it hurt me? Why is it so interesting? This inner dialogue is a very rich world, a very rich gift which we have. Many people know it, do it constantly. There are some people, especially in coaching and in therapy, who have no real inner dialogue, who cannot differentiate between the many voices in themselves, commentators, which is not the inner dialogue. These are internalized outer voices. This has to be separated. The basic principle in existential approach is dialogue. Dialogue is the social interaction, dialogical exchange with the world and with oneself. This "and" is often forgotten, especially in coaching. It was so impressive to hear from Sally that those who did work on themselves became very effective in their work, in their coaching. This is a prerequisite that we can do inner dialogue, that we have a good inner dialogue, because this is a role model for our clients. And out of this inner dialogue, I have much purer questions or observations which I can give back. These are the two worlds in which we stand. This is an existential view on the human being. I am connected with the outer world, the otherness, that what is going on around me, where I'm busy, where I'm active, where I'm cooking or talking or mailing, etc. But I am constantly connected with the inner world. And this me is the overlap of both worlds. Also the inner world, this sensing, feeling, emotions. Emotions are very important in our life. They're not just the shadow of rationality. They are perceptions, specific perceptions of what is relevant for our life in the existential perspective. So these two worlds, one, we have two legs. One is in the outer world and one should be rooted in the inner world. And both are more or less of the same diameter. Without this inner dialogue and without the dialogue with the others, we cannot become oneself, we cannot find ourselves, and we cannot find what is the future, the meaning, what should be done, what should be developed. But instead, emptiness and feelings of being lost, alienation come. Inner dialogue is referring to the inner self, to that what is very personal in me, to what starts speaking in me. This is a definition of the nucleus in ourselves. There is something like a voice, something like, it is also a resonance. Something starts speaking to me. When I go through the city, I say, oh, what a beautiful facade. It starts speaking in me. I don't do it. It's a gift which comes up to my conscious ego, to my conscious self. There are so many elements, so many situations where things start speaking in me, and to make that real and to lift that up and to connect with that makes us purely ourselves, authentic, deeper, more fulfilling. This is then makes me authentic. Then I refer to that what speaks within me. What is the specific structure for coaching and leadership? We can say a motivation of a coachee or of a leader, or when a leader works with his their collaborators, when we see several elements. When we see that I, or my coachee, or my collaborators, or me as a leader, I can do it. I make this structure, which is a very complex and big issue, I break it down to a very practical, easygoing overview. When I can do it. When I can do it, this connects me with the reality. It gives me possibilities. It opens a space. When I can do something, something is possible. You know, the reality is not blocking me. It's not just a wall, but there is a door when I can do it. When I like it. When I do things which I don't like. Essential structure of existence is lacking. We can do it, we can compensate it for a while, for a bit, but something what I like must be there. Maybe it's not the closest, but then it must be a bit further behind, visible, touchable, must represent something valuable for me. If I do not feel that it is valuable, that it is good, that it is also pleasant sometimes, not everything is pleasant, but I even like to go to the dentist because of the expected result. You know, this human being can help him, we can help ourselves by this abstraction, so that we can bridge over some gaps or difficulties for a longer range value. When I may do it, when I have the feeling it is correct, I can stand behind it. It is responsible. And when I should do it, when I have the feeling, yeah, this is a requirement. It's not just because I want it and I'm going to prepare the market, but to look at the market, what should be done in this actual situation? Environment is something great. In great theme, actually, it should be done more, given more attention to the environment. And there is meaning behind this. As a result, as a sum, turns out, when I can, like, may, and should do it, then I have a solidly based will. I want to do it. This will is strong. It is not going to fade away or to break when there is a first storm coming up. And this wanting is the inner consent. The inner consent is based on these dimensions. If this is not given, then it would be too little to really invest time and life energy in what we do. And we want the people, our coaches, our leaders, to invest time and energy. But they need a basis, a reason for. We all feel it's not worth living just for money, just for success. That's not why we are living, what we are living for. And we support people in coaching and leadership training to this existential demand. They should get to come to that feeling, or we want to do our best to infect them with something what is already in them, to bring that into resonance in them, that they can invest their time and life. Briefly said, when I can do, see the chances. When I like to do, I take my time. First, this is very, very important for coaching. See the chances, take your time. Do your own, do what matters. and feel what is needed. To sum up the existential structure in culture. So you can realize yourself. Success, few words, I only have 4 minutes left. Frankl gave this existential perspective on success. Success should be based on reality. So this, how can we do it practically? I concentrate, look at, work with values, with something what is valuable to spend time for. It may be simple things like cleaning the apartment or talking with my child or talking with a coachee. This is valuable and I take my time for it. And this is my intention, to do the best with it. Success is a side effect of what I do intentionally. The Latin word, it says it exactly. Sub sidere follows afterwards. And our attitude should be that we focus voluntarily with our will, deliberately, on this left side, on that what I can do. This is at my hands. This is das Zuhandene, as Heidegger says. And let be the success. We should not strive for success, existentially see. Success is a side effect. If I do what I can, if I do it at best, there will be a success. Maybe a success which I wished, or maybe another success which I didn't expect, maybe even higher or lower, but there is an effect. But if we try to focus success directly, then this is called manipulation. Then we fake the data, then we have less diesel pollution in VW cars, etc. This is manipulation. Because success must be based on a reality, must have a reason. The reason is my dealing with what is valuable. To sum up, 7 existential leadership tasks for leaders, but it's also important for coaching. A dialogical attitude to others. Dialogical means I-thou relationship. It doesn't mean discussion. Discussion is fighting about the theme. Who is right? Who has the better arguments? In dialogue, we do not look who has the better arguments. We look what is interesting you, what is important for you, what are you going to tell me, and how is this for me, and out of this I'm telling you how it is for me and what is important for me. It is an exchange on a partnership level. No imposition of power, of having right or being right. Dialogue, this is the basis. This is this first step, openness towards the other, openness towards the situation, the existential turn. Then the phenomenological attitude, this intuition, this inner authentic dialogue, to openness towards myself. I'm talking with myself and I'm listening. What's saying in myself? What is coming up? The structural basis, these 4 dimensions, a bit more information. The first has to do with trust and information. The second with values. Third, taking a stand and responsibility. And the fourth, meaning and becoming. To look at the inner consent. Do I have inner consent? What is your inner consent? The collaborator, the coach, and they may not have consent to what we propose as a leader, for instance. This is very valuable information. Why is he not consenting? Ask collaborators and ask coaches for their positions, to what they hear, to what they do. What do you think about it? How is that for you? This is invitation to speak out of their freedom, to be a person. Sorry. And the last is relativizing success. We esteem the commitment, the engagement, but the success, if at the end of the year it doesn't come out what we planned at the beginning of the year, this is not a failure. As long as we were committed to what we did and tried our best. There may be mistakes, there may be errors, but existentially seen, what counts is that we have had a good collaboration with ourselves and with our clients and coaches. So, life, to sum it up, it's a phrase of Frankl, but to finish it, life is not something. It is better to see it constantly as a chance, as an invitation that something emerges, that something happens. Thank you.
Professor Alfred Langlein, thank you so much for your speech, and I would love to listen to you for a couple more hours. And I'm so sorry we don't have that much time. However, we have time for a quick discussion based on questions on Slido. The first question is not a question, and it says, thank you so much. The next question is, how does the typical existential coaching session look like?
Formally, like all other coaching sessions. And in terms of content, we used to start with, how are you doing? Openness as an expression. How are you doing? Because we may be in a scene, but maybe there was a fight with the partner at home or difficulty with a child. Then people are occupied with something and they are not really free to continue our children. So we first give space to the person and to their actual life situation. And then we decide, maybe they say something like difficulties, and then we ask them, what do you think, is it good that we continue with our work and for the last session, or is it more important to spend some time on this situation? So, very personal, human.
Okay, thank you. Next question is, how to move with this we're not living for money and success attitude within corporations?
If I cannot convince the corporation, this corporation is not for me. Then, maybe. But I ask them, what are you looking for? Why do you want that money? Why do you want that success? And then, out of this, I reflect them back what I understand phenomenologically. And maybe we arrange, or maybe not. Not every company is open for such a kind of coaching or leadership development. There are very brutal companies which we have to fight when they do not look for the sake of their collaborators and the people. And coaches should not be slaves of such companies. Don't accept every offer of a work. Make your decision, take your position. If you do not have a consent to work with such a company, don't do it. Don't sell your soul.
Yeah, And we only have time for one more question, and that would be, how in this fast-paced environment do you keep the active listening? And tips are very welcomed.
This is the basis. Become silent.
Professor Alfred Langler, thank you so much.